cannot disappear.
Maybe hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Player scene in Auckland as Chris Lynn left the field in the arms of Australia's medical staff. Having struggled with recurring shoulder issues over the past 12 months, Lynn dived for a ball in the inner circle before aggravating the injury.
That might hurt. That just might hurt a bit. He's had terrible shoulder problems, AB. Terrible shoulder problems.
He has, and he's been told not to dive, which is hard to do.
Things you've been warned about, you just see a white ball and you try and save one run that could come in priceless later.
And then straight away, he knows he's done something to that shoulder.
He's got to go, Chris Lynn. Unfortunately, he holds the arm and support.
And it is my absolute pleasure. We have a bit of an off-season special for the podcast this week. We've got Chris Lynn, mighty Queenslander, played for the Bulls, the Heat, and Australia, mate. You're one of my obviously favourite cricketers going around. I've known you since we were young. We went to school together at Nudgee. But, mate, I really appreciate you coming on and talking through some injury stuff.
Yeah, thanks for that warm welcome, mate. It's been a while, but... Yeah, obviously not ideal talking about injuries, but I'm pretty open and honest about everything, and it's been a pretty different journey, I suppose. But it's definitely made me mentally stronger, and obviously with the last couple of years with COVID and things like that, it's not ideal sitting in quarantine and injuries happen through that. So, yeah, mate, pretty keen to give you a bit of insight of what's gone on the last probably decade, I reckon.
Yeah, mate, and that's exactly right. Like, you know, I work as a physio, so obviously dealing with injuries all the time, and it's often it's not, you know, not a fun thing to talk about and not a fun thing to have to go through. But as you know and as you've experienced, it's just a reality of, you know, not only professional sport but all sport. We all sort of face it to different levels at different times, and I think yours is a really good story of, you know, perseverance and sort of working through, you know, those challenges. As you said, and we'll talk about them, you know, multiple challenges there, but you've come out, you know, I'm sure you'd say a better person out the other end, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. It's not just in the sporting industry where you get injuries. People, I mean, the talking point now is when your brain breaks, right?
Mental health. 100%.
You know, and how guys come through it. And you know, everyone's got a different story. And people think, you know, they've done it all when they get injured or go through a rough time. But this, as I said, there's so many different stories and so many pathways out of it as well. So, that's one thing that rule number one is you don't give anyone stick because you don't know what they're going through. But, yeah, I've certainly had mine, but, you know, that's not something to cry poor about by no means. But, I just always ask myself, it's not what you can't do, it's what you can do. And that's a big sort of motto that I've taken, you know, throughout my pathway.
No, I love it, mate. That's awesome. So, look, let's jump straight into it. My first question I always like to ask, and this is, look, you know, I guess a relevant one because I'm sure I remember you not only sort of pummeling the hell out of my right arm slow mediums at, you know, year eight trials and stuff like that, but I'm sure you lit me up on the footy field a couple of times in high school as well. So, mate, like, obviously a lot of people will know your injury struggles sort of that you faced in your career, in your professional career, but they might not know anything sort of that happened prior to that. So did you face any injury challenges sort of before getting into professional cricket?
Yeah, my actual first major injury was through playing rugby league. I had a left knee, left ACL, full rupture, and the bloke who you're familiar with, Jared Beale, actually tackled me playing against Logan Brothers. You know, they were always a strong team. But Beale made the tackle, and mate, went down like a sack of shit. And it just felt the inside of the knee just burn. And I think we're only 15 or 16 at the time, so that was a certain, you know, big eye, my first surgery and all that, and it wasn't ideal, and I think I got to I think I played one more year of footy after that, and I thought, you know what, I always played cricket, you know, growing up, but I thought, you know what, I think I'm better off like facing blokes at bowl 140 than tackle blokes at wave 140. So I was thinking, oh, there's no the boys are so big now. So that was basically pretty much it for the rugby league career. But yeah, the knee reconstruction at an early age, and all you think about is your long-term longevity in sport, because I was sport mad and played, you know, AFL, rugby union, rugby league, swimming, and obviously cricket. So you're just thinking, all you care about is your body. Are you going to get back to your potential and whatnot? So you panic and you do all the work. And a knee reconstruction, you know, 15 years ago was about 9 months to get back on the paddock. It's a lot shorter now. And obviously you can get more keyhole and fine art when they get into the knee. But yeah, it was definitely something that rattled me as a junior. But as we spoke about it, it builds character, and I think you know coming out the other side of it now still gets a little bit achy now and again, but it's a sign that you know I'm not young anymore. So it is I think it's a good problem to have, but that was a big one. So rugby league was my passion as a youngster.
Yeah, but, I think that's an important one. That's definitely an important one to mention, and probably something I should have mentioned at the start, is it's not a completely sort of random jump too, is that, you know, being a footy podcast or talking about footy injuries as I am, you're a big footy head and are a big footy head, but you're also a big footy player, you know, back in the day, you loved your footy, and I assume, you know, even though cricket ended up being the be-all, end-all, a bit like myself, like I was big into tennis when we were sort of growing up, but you get to a place like Nudgee, mate, and there's cricket, swimming, you know, footy, there's everything, you just want to have a go at everything, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. We were very spoiled. And, like, I absolutely love coaching and mentoring young kids. And that's one thing, actually. I'm coaching on cricket, but go out and play all sports, you know, cross-train. And I believe that's why I can hit the ball, you know, quite hard, because, you know, most guys, when they're doing the gym, they'll max out once every 8 weeks or whatnot.
Yeah.
But when you're playing truly and tackling blokes, trying to, you know, turtle them on their back, that's a maximum effort every time. Yeah. So, essentially, you know, power creates power. And, that's why I reckon it's given me a nice strong base, you know, from a cricket and batting point of view, and certainly helped me out. But as I said, I don't think I would have made it in footy, but I gave it a go as a kid. But, mate, I enjoy watching the boys now. Like, they're just so big, so powerful, so strong. And, you know, not only that, add the skill, you know, side of things. They've just gone up a level, and how fast the game's played now, it's so cool to watch.
Oh, it's ridiculous, mate. And, you know, it's just crazy how, as you say, how big these guys are, how fast, how strong. And, yeah, I certainly wouldn't want to be out there either, mate. I'm glad I'm, you know, treating them rather than running at them. But, look, talking about your ACL reco, mate, that's a, you know, it's a fairly young age to have an ACL reco. How did you find it? I mean, you've obviously had different surgeries since then, but sort of looking back to that initial ACL reco, how did you feel you approached that, not only the surgery, but the rehab? Did you think, looking back, that you gave it, you know, what it deserved? Do you think you did a pretty good job? Or being a teenager, were you a bit lax? How did you go with that?
Yeah, well, at the time, you obviously think your sporting career's over and you carry on a bit, you're a fresh pup. But, mate, I think I did a really good job with it. I didn't rush back. And that's one thing, when you're a junior, you never rush back. You know, when you get older, and obviously if you're a contractor, whatever, money online, whatever, you do rush back a bit more. But when you're that age, just make sure you get in and do the work. And it's not the big heavy weights either. It's getting those core strength. You know, mobility is a big one as well. And because they took the graft out of my hamstring, the left side, that's where I'm continuing having troubles with now. Not troubles, but I have to work extra hard on that left side. You know, on that Nordic board, I'm about 75 points less on my left side. It can be as strong as it wants, but it's still going to be 75 less than my right side. So that's something that I, you know, concentrate on now, because, you know, and we'll probably talk about it later, but with my shoulders, for me, you know, hurt that now, that's to dive, and that's a conscious effort. So that's me making the decision to dive, whereas I have no choice if it's a calf or anything taking off now. So you've got to get that high-speed work in, making sure, you know, you're doing enough jumping, you know, in your training and explosive work, and, as I said, that top, the high-end speed. And, yeah, it's just something that you learn as you get older, and you know, the only way to learn is by getting injured more and more. So I think I need a free physio out there. I think I know everything to do when it comes to it.
Mate, post-career, there's your, you're onto it. You take my patience.
It's not the heavy weights, you know, like the Nordic hamstring stuff I'm really big on now.
Huge.
You know, I've got a mob that I've looked after me with some equipment, the home gym guys, if I can give them a shout out.
Yeah, mate, go for it.
Awesome. You know, the Nord stuff there and the Tid Bar has just been awesome for my rehab, and not rehab, mate, much of a program. You know, a lot of people think you need to deadlift all the heavy weights, and that's all well and good, but you've got to have, you know, that flexibility, and obviously cricket being a reactive sport, you want to have that power, and it's really crucial to have that. And so, as I said, you only learn one way, and I've learned, unfortunately, the hard way.
Yeah, man, I think that's a really important point that you say, is like where you said, look, it's not just your rehab. And I like, that's a big thing I drum into my athletes, is doing this work. It's not just about getting back from injury or preventing injury in the future. It's performance enhancement, right? Like, if you can sort this stuff out, you are going to be a better athlete, or, you know, a better sports person at whatever you choose to do, because you're fine-tuning your performance in those areas, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but when you're younger, you recover so much quicker. Yep. But as you get older, you got to put time into your warming up, what you eat, your diet, your fluids, and then your recovery as well. I was never big to get in the ice bath. I absolutely hated it. I thought, well, this is just cool. My body temperature down, not actually doing anything for your muscles. But, you know, you get older and wiser, and you think, oh, you know what, the coach was actually right. So I'm at that point now where you got to look after your body, because it can make a difference for another couple of years or however long you want to play for. And, a diet's a big one as well. Obviously, once you get over that hump of 30 years old,
you
can't just rock up for your preseason, or, you know, you can't expect to just, you know, bat for 20 overs. It's something that you got to look at. And I've always thought, you know, you're mentally strong, that can get you so far, but you still got to have that element of fitness just to get through without being, you know, injury, you know, the higher occurring rate of injury, especially your lower limb stuff.
Yeah, 100%, mate. Now, like, really like that you mentioned about the hamstring graft there, because that's a topic I really like to talk to people about, sort of post-ACL. So, like, going through your hamstring issues, mate, like, I did a bit of a search today, and, you know, 2011 had one, 2015, 2017, then you had a calf strain, you know. I think 2020, I saw a video of you on Twitter when I did a search, running back for a catch in the, you know, in the warm-up, and boom, there it goes again. So, mate, like, I think, look, that's a, like, to be honest with you, that's a pretty typical rap sheet that we see for a lot of guys sort of post ACL reco that have the hamstring graft. So, I guess, talk me through sort of how your process, you talked about how you're now at the Nordic, you know, the Nordboard kind of stage.
Yeah.
Even going through those early stages, like, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who are listening who are, like, going through similar stuff with hammies where you just can't seem to get on top of them. They're really, really tough to sort of get completely out of your game. How did you go through all those processes?
Well, I suppose it's putting your ego aside, thinking, you know, after grade one hammy, I can get back in about, I think, 10 to 12 days.
Yep.
But you've got to, yes, you might be sore, but there's a difference between good and bad soreness. You know, you can get up, you can still do stuff, walk around, pretty much pain-free in the first 48 hours or whatnot, but you've got to get up and got to get moving, because the longer you sit down and, you know, cry poor about it, you're actually, you know, extending that time, that rehab time. So the big thing for me is getting up, doing something, but then earning the right to build up your pace. Don't just going zero to hero. I've learned the hard way. And the other thing is actually using your trigger points, you know, making sure you're as loose as you can be in your hip flexors, your glutes, your lower back, because then that takes, obviously, a lot of pressure off your hamstrings. I found, if I was taking shortcuts, I'd actually run with a shorter stride to protect it. But I knew deep down I hadn't put in the work previous, like enough work to get me through. It's all, you can play a couple of games, that's fine. But once your body starts, you know, you're on a flight here or there, or you start getting a bit tired, that's when you go. And as you saw on Twitter, me running back for an overhead catch, you know, body in a slightly awkward position. And once my legs were a bit more extension, that's when it went. So I knew I wasn't prepared enough. And it's not, and you don't actually don't play your best as well when you're going into games full. Like, it's all well and good to tell the coach you're right to play and you want to play and show that attitude that you want to play, but you know deep down whether or not you've done the work or not. And so, a big thing for me is actually, you know, going to, if I've had an extended break, going to tournaments, and, you know, earlier, getting off the flight, you know, instead of going a week earlier, go 2 weeks earlier. So there's no flight issues, tightness, you know, you climatized to the, whether that it's heat or cold. And just doing the work and then going into your first fixture, you know, with that peace of mind that you're ready to go.
Oh, absolutely, mate. And like with you, you mentioned there, you know, still doing work on the Nord board and stuff, looking at the scorings and stuff like that. So even when you're good, and I think that's an important thing for people to know too, even though you're good, you're still keeping on top of that stuff. Hey, like that's a really important part, is even though theoretically, you know, you're injury free at the moment, that's something, you know, that extra little step that you want to take to try and keep away from that re-injury.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's bringing it into your daily routine as well. Don't just do it when you do a gym session. Like, it only takes a couple of minutes, and you actually don't need a gym to do a lot of hamstring work. You know, you can do single leg raises, you know, on the couch, or, you know, on the edge of your bed, on a chair, and those things. You don't have to, as I said, be lifting the heavy weights or be in a gym. You don't need a Nord board, but we, you know, we're very lucky to have those facilities. Yeah. So you can do a lot of stuff. You'd be surprised how much you can do at home with a band.
That's right.
And a lot of people just think, you know, if they can just walk in the gym and get it done, whereas I think the extra stuff, you know, doing away from it is big. And also the timings, I suppose, when you do it. So don't do it before a high-speed running session. Being smart about that. You know, do your running first and then get your strength work in, and then give yourself the longest period to recover before your next running session, high-speed, generally speaking.
Yeah, 100%, mate. No, I think you've, as I said, you're going to take my job off me post-career, I think, mate. You are all over it. I love hearing it. I love it. Like, I love, like, when, you know, athletes show passion about this stuff. You know, it's really, really good to see. As you said, you might, you know, you learn, obviously, as you go. But, mate, I love it. It's really, really good stuff. Now, we'll move on. Everyone loves a testicle story, mate, and we're going to go there. I'm really, really sorry. We're going to do it. Now, 2012-13, I think it was, we've got a mishap while batting, you know, probably facing a fast bowler, I assume. Mate, give me this story. How did it happen? Like, how long did you have to wait for surgery? What are we talking about?
Yeah, so we were playing a one day at Queensland versus New South Wales at the Gabba. I remember it's clear as day.
Of course you do, mate. Like,
mate, and we fielded, and we were chasing about, I don't know, maybe 180 or 200. And we got off a decent start, and I was batting, and, you know, it was a cold night. It's freezing, actually. Jumpers on, and big Dougie Bollinger was steaming in, and I've tried to hit him out of the Gabba, like, because big Dougie bowls quite quick. And, you know, I just inside edged it, and it's gone up, and as my front foot's gone down, my sort of box has just come a little bit away from my body, and inside it just shattered it. I've ruptured my testicle as well. And, mate, Brad Haddon was wicket-keeping, and I just dropped in a ball of sweat. And, like, normally, you know, when you get hit in the nuts, you're like, oh, mate, this is 10 minutes and we're sweet. Yeah. We'll play on. So it's like early days of my career. I can't be a pussy. I can't go off. I'm getting worse. And Brad's just like, you sweet, mate? Like, it's freezing cold, and I'm just dripping with sweat. And then I'd launch like three of the biggest sixes that I hit at the stage. Oh, nice. Shawnee Abbott into the top deck. And I'm like, oh, mate, just hit one straight up. And funny enough, I think the next over, I hit one off Stephen O'Keefe straight up. And I could not get off the ground quick enough. I've laid down, I've unpadded, I've laid in the nude on the chain room with ice on it for probably a good hour. And then what happens when you rupture something, a bit like your hamstring, it curls up. Yeah. Like, everything curls, muscles tense up. And it took me another 45 minutes to go from the fetal position on the ground to getting up, not standing. And it was just a nightmare. I was in agony, mate, rolling around. Like this, I was nauseous. I wanted to vomit. Yeah. The sweat that was coming off. And, like, people are coming in now to change rooms. Me, I'm like, I could not give a single shit. And then, got up. When finally got up, got to the hospital, had an ultrasound. They put a little bit of gel on that cold stick thing, and the way they, I was like, oh no, absolute ball, like, so to speak. But and then so I was out for about 2 or 3 weeks, and the next day it was just like down there, it was just black.
Yeah,
you know, it was quite funny because a good mate of mine, Wendell Saylor, popped over about a week later to come say good day, and I thought we were twins for a minute there.
He would have loved that too.
And then I actually started playing again a month later.
Yep.
And then I was at training, and I was diving for a couple of balls, and then every time I landed on my front, I'd get real nauseous and start spewing. So what happened was it kept, like, I actually got drained on the physio table, and I tell you, that was one of the most painful, that was the second most painful thing to get in here, when they've got this huge needle on, on hanging on the physio table.
Oh,
like,
mate.
And moving it around, and it probably, it looked like half a can of 4X gold come out.
Oh.
Yeah. And then within 24 hours, it swelled back up again, and that's when I went into surgery, and it's a bit like balloon around your testicle, yeah. And that's what keeps the fluid in. That's why I kept going. So that the surgery was to remove that balloon around it. But yeah, mate, it was there's a interesting story for you. It was an absolute nightmare, mate. But it's still there in spirit. But yeah, lights are on, but no one's on for that one.
Oh, mate, and is it something? Did you have to get any extra protection added to your box? Like, were you a bit hesitant, you think, when you went back batting? Like, how did you?
I was a little bit. Yeah, I was a little bit. I actually went on. I'm trying to think of the website. Body Armor. No, yeah. I can't think. It's a MMA one, yeah. And they do a titanium box.
Oh yeah.
I think it was one of the first ones. I double boxed first, and I use this titanium thing, and. Mate, it's unbelievable, this titanium box. I'd rather get hit in the box than in the leg now. I remember Dirk Nannes, who used to bowl 150 clicks. I went again, tried to whack him out of the stadium and just hit me flush. And just, I've still got the same box from 10 years ago, and it just made a little ding in it. I was like, mate, how is this? Like, oh, I wish I had good. This 12 months prior. But yeah, it's, you know, obviously, like anything, when you get an injury, like, if the ball chases you around or you get hit the same spot all the time, it's just Mother Nature saying hello to you.
That's right, mate. But I guess the good news that we'll, you know, reveal to our listeners who might not follow you on social media or anything like that, everything worked out well because you obviously have a beautiful baby now. Yeah. So everything's, you know, we're all good.
Yeah, she looks like me, like nothing like her mother as well. So they must be going all right. But good, mate. Yeah, mate, beautiful little Lily. She'll be 12 weeks next week. So absolute beautiful little gem, and obviously a life changer for the better.
Oh, mate, absolutely. And it's good, you know, there are really good, you know, long-term results if you can get those testicle injuries seen too pretty quickly. So thankfully for you, that was definitely the case, which is awesome to hear, mate. So look, we'll move on from your nether regions, mate. We won't stay there too long, but
yeah,
I guess
this,
that's right. Let's go to the main event, because this is, you know, the one that I think everyone will sort of know about, is the shoulder or the shoulders. So, look, I look back, so the earliest mention I could find was 2014. They kind of described you had some shoulder soreness initially, but then they said, oh, no, he requires surgery. And I found some mention of rotator cuff, others saying shoulder reco. So how did that 2014 or that first shoulder injury play out?
Yeah, I was playing an academy game, Australian A game up in Darwin. Phil Hughes actually got like a 100, I reckon, that tour in a one-day game. Sort of first guy to do that. And, just diving around, and I couldn't throw. Like, it just got worse and worse, and the partial tear turned, you know, it just got worse, and it was never going to repair. And that was the first shoulder recon that I had on my left side, my throwing arm. My dominant arm is left.
Yeah.
And then, a couple of years later, I was another fielding drill. I remember, so clear. I was at Allan Border Field and just with Phil Jakes, the coach at the time, and doing this, trying to stop him inside the cones, a bit like a goalkeeper type drill. And one sort of beat me in, it got behind me in full length, and then bang, it was out. And it was probably the worst one, I reckon, because I couldn't get it back in right there and then. And it was out for probably a good 45 minutes.
Oh, shit.
And obviously, after it's out, it's going to stretch all the ligaments and whatnot. I remember blowing that green whistle, and it wasn't doing jack shit. Like, it was so painful.
Oh,
and
shit.
I had to wait for the show to come to go under. And I remember, said clear as day, it was when Khawaja came up to the hospital with me and watched him put it back in. And if you ask him, it wasn't a great sight.
No.
So that was probably the big one that really, hindered my performances for a couple of years there. As I said, because it was so loose and they've got to do a tighter job on it. And then obviously having to throw left arm, you need that rotation. I just didn't quite have that. And then I actually changed arms for a bit. And then Actually, before I changed arms, I was naturally trying to throw my right arm because that's what you do in your rehab. And as I said at the start of the show, it's not what you can't do, it's what you can do. So let's work on something else. Let's work on my right arm throwing. So I got that to a decent level. I could throw like 30 metres flat, like quite firm right arm. I thought I was pretty happy with that. And then I went to play a 2020 for Australia and Sri Lanka. And the day before the game, I'd take another dive and go bang, it goes out. So I've gone to Sri Lanka for 24 hours, come back. And then what was the next one? I think, I was in New Zealand and there was a series where we sort of scored 240 or chased 240 at Eden Park and, great series. And we're in the final and we bowl first and Ross Taylor hits one at mid-wicket. And because my left arm was cooked, I tucked that under and throw the right out when it was on my left side. Yeah. So what that puts me in an awkward position. I've flown my parents over to watch. Oh, and I'm like, shit. It's great. And then bang. And the worst thing was, not only, it was an easy single down to, long on. And because I bunted it and dribbled down, they ran an extra two runs. So not only have I bunted the shoulder, I'll let a couple of runs in. And so, the right one goes. So then I'm in all sorts at the time. I'm thinking, oh, no. I didn't actually have surgery on my right shoulder and it's still, I'm moving my arm right now and I can just feel like I need some WD-40 in there. But I went back to throwing with my dominant arm, my left side, and it's just a work in progress every day. I know it's not 100%, but I feel like I can still contribute and outweigh my contributions with the bat. And I think I can get around in the field and hide well enough.
Yep.
The fact that I only play T20, and that was probably a driving factor as well, going down that pathway. The ball doesn't come to you as often. My biggest fear in the world is playing day one or day two of the Shield game, fielding all day, batting, all day, and not being able to lift my arm the next day and then letting my teammates down one short, for the rest of the game. That was my biggest fear and a driving factor why I chose shorter format. Not only that, I think it obviously suited my game a lot more and it's a lot more fun and entertaining. But that was from a body point of view, that was the reason why,
100%, mate. No, I thought the one you were going to be most filthy about, because I remember this one pretty clearly, was I think it was 2017, you dove to try and catch Josh Butler, mate, and went down and dropped the catch, and the left shoulder went out. I thought for sure you'd still be hanging on to that.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. I was in Mumbai.
Sorry, mate. I remind you.
Packed out. And Josh has hit the ball over my head. I'm like, I'm getting it. Full length dive. I had it in, and then as soon as I landed, bang, it went out.
Yeah.
Paul Chapman, my trainer at the Brisbane Heat and Queensland Bulls at the time, is still the Mumbai trainer. And he saw it, and I was like, mate, you're going to have to put, because I was pretty close to the boundary. I said, mate, you're going to have to help me put this back in, and got it back in eventually. But, mate, that's when I was, I think I had the orange cap at the time for the leading runs of the IPL, and the big auction was coming up as well. So, popped it out, and I was like, I was doing everything I could. And I got back in about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
After that dislocation, because it wasn't out for too long, it was quite painful. But I knew I just had, there was a big money on offer if I keep banging on here. So it worked out really well. I got back and scored some nice runs and quick runs, and it worked out really well for me at Kolkata for a couple of years there. And mate, it's amazing what you do, knowing that you can't die or shouldn't die, but when there's a full house in Mumbai, the IPL's on the line, you do silly things, and you look back, you don't have any regrets, mate. That's the thing. I've always played the game 100 miles an hour, and mate, we've got to make life interesting at some point.
That's exactly right, mate. Now, one thing I had about this, which look, a lot of my listeners used to footy players, like footy players in your position, what they'll do is it'll happen, they'll reassess, and they'll probably put surgery off till the off season, right? Because they've got 6-8 months, depending on what their off season looks like, to get right. Whereas for you, mate, especially as you said, you're playing this short form cricket, sometimes trying to find an off season would be quite tough, right? Like trying to find a gap where you can go, oh right, I can get surgery. So did that sort of influence your decisions about, not getting surgery, getting surgery? Because obviously with these shoulder dislocations, it can go either way sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest thing for me is, like, did I want to go through all that rehab process again? That's just the game that, like, kept me up at night. You know, when you're in a sling, you can't lay, like, you can't sleep in bed. You sort of got to be upright. Pillows tucked everywhere. Every time you cough, it's a nightmare. Going to the bathroom's a nightmare. That scared the hell out of me to do it again. And when you have all those thoughts go through your head, like, I'm good mates with Jack Reed, and obviously everyone knows about his shoulder issues.
Yeah, well, I spoke to him on this podcast a couple of months ago, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just the thought of, is this my last chance? So, as I said, I've still, you know, I think scoring more runs, and the pros are outweighing the cons at the minute. So, yeah, it's definitely something that plays on your mind, but getting timing to everything and not being, I guess, selfish with that timing.
Yeah.
Not selfish, putting your ego to the side and making a decision without the emotion. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned, you know, along the way, especially when you skip her aside, you can get quite, you know, caught up in everything. But when you go from the couch view, when your heart rate's down and you know what's going on and thinking a lot more clearer, you obviously make the right decision. And, you know, and the biggest thing is talking to people as well, getting advice. You know, you think because it's your own body, you know what's going on or you know what's right for you. It's not always the case. Yeah. And you know how hard you want to work if you want to get back in time or, as I said, if there's no shortcuts to it, you just got to get in and do it. But I think a big thing is knowing the good pain from bad pain as well. I think there's a lot of people that are happy to choose bad pain and, you know, put it in the too hard basket, whereas, you know, it can be painful, but it's a good pain. Yeah. Get through it. If you push through that barrier, you come out the other side, Jesus Christ, you feel amazing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think an interesting point that you touched on, we'll just quickly touch on it again, is kind of those changes that you made to your game, not only sort of changing your throwing arm from left to right, but like even simple stuff. Like I remember, obviously, I've kept up with your career, you know, and taken an interest having known you from a young age. And like I remember you, you know, having to be captain, but trying to hide yourself in the field sometimes. So putting yourself at fine leg, but you're the captain and those kind of things. So it's just about mixing things up away from the, I guess, the usual to try and find ways, as you said, to make sure that you're in that team and still able to contribute.
Yeah, absolutely. And just finding ways, as you said, contribute, add value somewhere. If you're not scoring runs, add value in the change room. Yep. Be the best team man you can. Train a different way. Help out at training, you know, or change your training. Like, I don't do a lot of high-speed running just by myself because I play TRL on a Wednesday night. Yep. So that gets my high speed up, things like that. Being around a team environment, mate, cricket's a funky game where you could have 5 good days a year of cricket. That's it. That's scoring 500s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
So there's a lot of bad days, so you've got to have the ability to enjoy your teammate's success and get around that. And that can happen for footy players like a winger, for example. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you need too many touches, you got to try and find a way to, you know, add value. Someone like Josh Adokar, yes, he's freak and scores a lot of tries, but he adds value in every department that he's involved in. The young kids should learn from that. Yes, it's a bit leery or anything, but he owns that. He's genuine for that and he's accountable for that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree, mate. Now, you mentioned earlier, and this is something I always like to talk about, the mental side of this, because as you said, it's not just physical, it's about the mental side too. I know, like I was reading today, especially after that right shoulder, and you mentioned, you know, there's a couple of dark days, you know, you can get down in the dumps, all that kind of stuff. Like, how did you go through that process? Did you go down the professional help side of things? Did you more sort of look at your personal support network? How did you approach that mental health side of things when you're having those recurrent injuries?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mate, we're not robots, we're not bulletproof. No. So I definitely felt vulnerable at times and felt shit out, and then you get on the piss and you're thinking, oh mate, it'll just heal itself, and you drink too much or whatever, and you know, I always believe when you do the crime, you do the time. So as you get older, you realise that, you know, as I said, you don't recover as well as you used to. But a couple of things for me, you know, a good mate of mine is Gordon Tallis, and, you know, I say, mate, I'm struggling a bit here and there. He goes, mate, if you think you're struggling, go up to the hospital ward and see you're struggling.
Yeah.
You know, and very simple. I know it's a bit extreme,
yeah.
But you go, you know what? That's after you peel back a few layers and a bit of gratitude, we got a pretty fucking good mate.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, as I said, it goes back to it's not what you can't do, it's what you can do. And for me, with a shoulder recon, I can throw the other side, or I can work on my hamstrings. You know, I can make sure I can get back running, you know, and rather than not running and then having to take up time to build up my legs again, or, you know, if you're, you know, as simple as, yeah, getting your routines in order. And that's a big one for me, is having a routine now that I'm trying to work with. And a big thing is, mate, you're not going to have good days every day. You're allowed to have bad days. And so don't be afraid to express that. So I think it was about 3 years ago now, I hired my own sports psych, nice. away from cricket, you know, the team guys. And, mate, it's one of the best things I've ever done, because yeah, I was in with all the quarantine. And I did 4 months in 2.5 years. I did 4 months in hard quarantine, and that was an absolute nightmare. So to get around that and keep obviously trying to be physically fit in your room and whatnot, you know, Stewie Smith, his name is, he's just been an absolute belter for me, and it's just something to bounce stuff off. And, mate, he doesn't force you to do anything, but again, it's just a bit of a reality check if you are having a shit day. Are you really having a shit day, or are you just, you know, being a bit of a sook?
Yeah.
And puts things, a lot of things into perspective, which are, you know, it's been awesome. You take a step back, as I said, from that couch view, doing your routines, to gratitude, to finding more hours in the day to do stuff. It's been a process over the last 2.5 years, and a big thing, probably the biggest thing I've learned, is being in the moment. It's so easy to just, rock up to a game and, yes, there's a ball coming down you, but are you actually in the moment? Are you soaking up the crowd, whatever it is, or are you on your phone all day in your hotel room, embracing whatever's in front of you, different country, different foods, or meeting new people. I think it's so big on, being in the moment right now, and just, observing a lot as well. Keeping your ears open is another thing that I've tried to do, because the more you talk, the less you listen, I think.
100%, mate. Mate, this is, that's awesome stuff. It's exactly like, I talk to so many people who are a bit hesitant about, investing in that side of being an athlete, right? Like, that mental side and stuff. And I'm like, it will be one of the best investments you'll ever make. And look, from you talking there, it sounds like you'd probably agree.
Yeah, I think so, mate. And look, a lot of people learn differently as well. So I don't do it anymore, because I think I can do it, and that's journaling. You ask yourself three questions. How do you feel? Why do you feel that way? And what can I do to change? So I was doing this. I'm talking sort of throughout quarantine, but even in your daily routine, do that three times a day: in breakfast, morning, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if you're out of routine, that's how the easiest way to get in it. And how do you, and give yourself a marking out of 10? Do I feel like pretty shit? Am I 4 or 5? All right, and I'll get this to a 6 or 7 by asking the question, what can I do? And just break down the day, rather than having 24 hours to do one thing and then you achieve that and go sit on the couch again. The journaling was a big one for me. As I said, now I can do that without writing it down, because a lot of people learn by reading, a lot of people learn by visualizing or whatever it is. So for me, I was downloading that from my mind to a bit of paper, and then being done with it. Everyone says you can't control what's happened in the past, and that's exactly what was helping me do that, downloading from my brain onto a bit of paper and moving forward.
No, it's excellent strategy, mate. Really, really good to hear. Now, my last two questions, always like to finish with this. Look, have a bit of fun with it if you want, but your toughest teammate, and probably the more important one, your softest teammate. So have you got someone who, just won't, won't do fitness because they've got a tight hammy or a broken nail or something like that, and then the toughest teammate, the guy who'd just play through anything? I've put you on the spot here, so I do apologise.
Toughest is Brendan McCullum, mate.
Oh, yeah?
Brendan McCullum, hands down. Mate, the first ever Big Bash game, I saw Brett Lee put one through his grill, and I was next out the bat. I was like, and he walked out the bat at like 20 minutes later after Doc John Orchard stitched him up, actually, and got him back out there. And, mate, some of the stuff, I've seen Brendan McCullum just get battered and bruised, and just one of the toughest, mentally tough, physically tough, you know, that's why he's New Zealand great and a cricketing, you know, hero.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a no-brainer there. But then we go to the other end of the scale.
This is the fun one, mate.
The softest. Oh, mate, there's a few contenders.
That's
there.
I thought you'd have a few.
Bloke that probably won't give me too much grief is Joe Burns.
You know, I was like, he's going to say Joe Burns for sure.
Yeah, another nudgy fella. Yeah, look, cricketers aren't built like footy players, so you could probably throw a handful in there, but I'll go easy on them and just leave it with Burns.
No, Burnsy, that's all right. That's I think that's a good nomination, mate. I love it. No, look, mate, I really appreciate you coming on for a chat. I know, you know, as I said, a lot of people out there probably think, why is he getting a cricket player on an NRL podcast? But, mate, as I said, you're a massive footy head. You love your footy. Yeah. Your first injury was playing footy. And mate, a lot of those lessons there that you've given are applicable to anybody who's going through their injury struggles, and I know, as I said, you've gone through yours, but you've come out the other side, and you're bigger and better for it. But really appreciate you coming on and have a chat, mate.
Absolutely, mate. And we're going to see the Broncos in the top eight next year,
mate. I'm on the Dolphins. I'm a Redcliffe boy. That's where I, you know, Redcliffe to Nudgee with the early days. So I think I'm going to have to jump on the Dolphins, mate. So we might be on opposing teams from now on.
I might get a gig there next year. Come on.
Well, I think last time I caught up with you, mate, was in person, was at the Caxton after a Broncos game. You know, we were, you know, tearing up the dance floor or something like that. So we'll have to meet there after a Bronx-Dolphins game.
Absolutely. Oh, the main thing is the North Devils got up. They were my junior
team. Oh, mate, don't even start me with that. I'm still getting over it.
Yeah. Mate, such a pleasure. I appreciate you having me on, bud.
No, awesome, mate. Great to talk to you.
Tate. Four! Chris Lynn has taken the wild thing and sent him possibly over the roof. Look at the look on his face. He's just, well, that's what I do. It was at 148. Oh, it's now on the opposite speedometer.
My days.
Even the wild thing's gone well. I can't do much about that.
Not the way to start the spell, is it? It's huge. It's a Dan Christian like. That's gone a mile in the air. Let's see how that's come off the bat.
Oh, my goodness, mate.
Is that the ball screaming then, or is that Tony Bunting?
117 metres is our nearest guess. Actually, it's getting bigger. It's now 121.
We couldn't see it after it went up.
Well, I think it's now 150 metres because it's in a truck.
Well, it's halfway
it's
down.
Just gone to the Gold Coast.
It's on the way into the CBD. Lenny, yep, no worries.
Yep.